Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Let's go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Yeah, that's me. Just banging away in here. That's all we're doing here. Welcome inside the playbook for Wednesday, everyone, on Patriots.com radio. Eric Scalavino, PFW, what's happening?
Trying to de-thaw from being out in the cold a little while ago.
Yeah, all right. Very good.
Thaw. I guess if I de-thawed, I'd be getting cold again, wouldn't I?
Right, precisely. Yeah, precisely. Well, did you, I kind of sensed from some of the conversation at the tail end of everything that was going on toward the end of PFW that you basically cashed in on the season. Is that a correct assessment?
I am not confident that they can win the Super Bowl at this point, no. That was essentially, we've been talking about it for the last, 2 weeks now.
Yep.
And I've lost confidence in, earlier in the season I thought they were, earlier in the year, before the season started, I thought they were legitimate favorites to win the Super Bowl.
Right.
And, as the season has progressed, I've not seen the kind of playmakers that it takes to do that, and they've been playing poorly of late, and I've just kind of lost the confidence that I had earlier in the year. So,
well, I'll be honest with you. I am kind of glad you said that, because I was thinking the very same thing about halfway through the game on Sunday. And without wanting to be, a total complete killjoy here, I don't have any visions of grandeur for this team this year. Not like I did, at the beginning of the season,
right?
Which took a huge blow after before the season even got started when Richard Seymour was traded away, mm-hmm. And we even talked about it way back at that point. But just based on what I've seen. And what we know, the matchups to be and what the playoffs will be like. I mean, sure, this team can win the division, should be able to win the division, although I don't think anything's a given with this team any longer.
No.
I sense, though, that for most of the fans that listen to us, most of the fans that follow the team, not everyone, but I'm going to say these people will be in the majority of fans, that a division title is not enough, that anything less, and this kind of goes to what you guys were talking about a short while ago about the fans being spoiled, anything short of at least an AFC championship game appearance, if not a Super Bowl appearance, is considered a disappointment now in New England. And, while I understand that the bar has been raised very high now in terms of how you judge level of success, I also still believe that each season is an entity unto itself. That, it's in this day and age of free agency and everything else that's going on, it's kind of like college. Every once in a while, you're expected to rebuild, even though, every 4 years, your players don't necessarily go away. But free agency has led to a little bit more of that. I just think that, maybe what I'm victim of here is high expectations. And I know for a fact that before the season started, I thought this team could compete for a Super Bowl based on what we saw personnel-wise. I spent a lot of time yesterday talking about that, and the fact is that we basically misjudged the talent on this team. And when you combine that with some of the quote-unquote questionable moves, questionable play calling, questionable strategy, non-adjustments, yada, yada, let's add up the list here, it doesn't look good for the remainder of this season. And this is where I will join you in that assessment. Now, does that mean, though, that in retrospect, if we look back on this season as a division champion, and, they're going to get a home game, and right now it would be Denver in the 4-5 game. And, frankly, I think the Patriots, certainly can win that game against Denver as long as it's here. If they actually get into a second-round game against, say, Indianapolis again, or, for that matter, even San Diego, but let's say Indianapolis again, and fall short, who really should be disappointed? Who should be disappointed?
Just based on looking at this season as its own entity, you're saying?
Yeah. Because I think we can all agree that seems to be where this team is headed. As bad as it may be, as much as we dislike some of the things that are going on, as much as we gripe, much as we nitpick on Tuesdays and any other day of the week for that matter, as much as we do all of that stuff, when the end product is finished and they are actually able to get to that point, if, of course, they are able to get to that point, where I'm talking about division champion, second round of the playoffs, should we really, are we that spoiled where we can't enjoy that?
Yes. I think that's where we are with the franchise. I mean, they've won three Super Bowls. They should have gone and won a fourth and gone undefeated in 07. You know, you could argue they should have beat the Colts in the 06 AFC Championship game. They could have won five this decade. There's, you know, there have been several opportunities for this team, especially in the second half of this decade.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, winning just begets more winning, and that begets expectation. And, you know, when you get to the top, you don't ever want to think about going back down to the bottom again. You know, even though it might happen, you don't want to think about it. So I think, you know, it's kind of like, you remember in the 80s when the Celtics were back to where they had been in the 60s and were winning titles. You know, people were expecting the Celtics to be in the NBA Finals every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like we're the Red Sox for so many years. People expected them not to win the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten to the point where they've won so much that that's what you expect out of the team. And the integral pieces are still there. It's not like Belichick's gone, Brady's gone. You know, everybody on defense, you know, that even has a Super Bowl ring is gone. There are still key cogs in place. The ownership is still what it's been. So with those things still in place, I think people expect that, you know, the good times are going to continue to roll.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, I can understand why some people would feel that way because everything has been, you know, raised to a higher level. But I wanted to take at least a little bit of time to not appreciate, but to sort of reset the bar a little bit, because frankly, this is not the team that we saw in 07, and we really should have known that from the get-go, and shame on all of us for over-evaluating where this team was. For that matter, shame on the coaching staff for over-evaluating where some of these guys were in terms of their talent level.
Well, but you know what, John? In 07, we could have been wrong. You know, Moss could not have been the Moss of old like he predicted he was going to be.
Yeah.
Welker could have been just an average run-of-the-mill third wide receiver. You know, Dante Stallworth and Jabbar Gaffney could have just been, you know, like this year, non-productive second and third wide receivers.
Right.
We could have been wrong then, but we were right. We saw what we had going into this year, which was the Moss of old, the Welker that's come into his own, and we thought we had a legitimate, better than Dante Stallworth, number three wide receiver in Joey Galloway. We thought we had some young, productive players coming up at that position. We thought the tight ends were going to get more involved, which they have up and down, on and off this year, really through no fault of their own. It's just part of the game plan hasn't been going through them consistently. And, you know, I think we had good reason to be optimistic about this offense. And on defense, they seem to have plugged up some of the holes that were there in the offseason, specifically the secondary. And then I think you're right. When Seymour got traded, everyone was kind of like, oh, now all of a sudden there's questions about the defense.
Right.
And they actually looked like they were starting to come together right about the bye week. And then after that, you know, in that tough November stretch is when things started to fall. The bottom started to fall out a little bit. So, you know, you can only kind of gauge where you are at the time. And at the time, before the season, everything looked like, on paper, it was going to be good.
Right.
It has since not been good. So at the time, what we're looking at now is that they're not very good. So, you know, earlier when it looked good, we had confidence. Now it doesn't look good, we don't have confidence. I think that's just a natural way of responding to what we're seeing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's worth debating in terms of, you know, trying to get a gauge for where, you know, fans are from. So that's what I would ask folks today, webradio@patriots.com. Largely, you know, are you disappointed in the season? Are your expectations too high? Did you set your expectations too high for this team? And do you feel like this team still has a shot to do something this year? And if they don't get to, say, the Super Bowl in Miami, is this a bad year? Is this a poor year by comparison? So I would like for those of you to to chime in on that one in particular today. Although I will tell you, Eric, you'll have to read some of these emails because my ISP has decided to go down on us today.
Oh, really?
My wife just informed me that she's not able to get online upstairs either today. And I was wondering, why does my computer always have these problems on Wednesdays when I come home and do it in the studio? And it seems like they're working on the phone lines on Wednesdays around here.
Don't be jealous, but I've been chatting online with babes.
Well,
all
let me
day.
See if I can let me see if I can jump over to that computer and log in then.
All right. So at any rate, we'll handle it that way. Coming up here in just a few minutes, Mark Kelso from the Bills Radio Network. He does the color analysis on the Bills Radio Net. He's going to join us to talk a little Buffalo, and then we'll have some conference calls and looks like some locker room stuff for you coming up in hour number two of the playbook today. What was that, Doc? What'd you say?
I said not a lot of locker room.
Not a lot. Well, whoever is willing to talk. Quite frankly, we don't even know what that might be at this stage of the game. It doesn't surprise me as another thing that some of these guys are starting to kind of, reel it in a little bit, play things a little bit more close to the vest. This team, in fact, I spent quite a bit of time yesterday kind of ragging on that a little bit. This team does need to sort of pull it together because they're all on different pages. And I think the escapades of last week underscored that, tenfold. That, there are some players, not all, but some on this roster that are just not seeing it eye to eye as Patriots teams have all been together in the past. Now, that I'm assuming you would agree with.
I'm sorry, John. I was half reading an email.
Oh, that's okay. What were you reading?
I was just trying to proofread an email before we it on the air.
All right, never mind then.
So no, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Make your point again.
No. I was just saying that, quite frankly, it's not even terribly important. I was just thinking that, I would think that most people would have at least some bit of disappointment to this season. And if they do, that's normal. But at the same time, those fans who have been particularly long-term fans, I'm hoping that they can see that, there would still be some good out of this if this team is able to, say, go as far as the second round number one. The other way that I look at it is that, if you are, quote-unquote, rebuilding, which I think everybody has to do at some point in time, maybe this is just part of the process, but you have to have a sort of a foundation. Maybe this year is part of that. And if you can actually build your foundation a little bit higher above the ground than, say, some of the other teams were coming along, which I kind of see as the Patriots trying to do this year, maybe that's a plausible reason for what we've seen go on this year.
Well, see, I kind of think in 06, remember they started the season with the whole Deion Branch controversy and he ended up getting traded to Seattle. And the consensus was Brady has no receivers. This offense, how is this offense going to score points? They have no receivers. And towards the end of the year, the guys that they picked up, including Gaffney, who came in off the street, and Rashay Caldwell, ended up being playmakers enough that they got to the AFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. And I think people kind of, even though they lost to the Colts that year, people kind of said, hey, you know what? They kind of looked on the bright side and said, hey, this team made it this far with that group of wide receivers. Imagine what they could do if they had, potent offense. And we all saw what they did the next year. So mm-hmm. I think people were able at that point to look on the bright side of things because I think they still felt like there was a foundation at least, or there was something to look forward to. I don't think people have that same sense now that there's anything to look forward to with this team because – frankly, some of the stars are getting older and some of the guys' contracts are coming to an end and people are maybe kind of in the back of their minds wondering if we're seeing the last of some of these guys in, blue and silver.
I think that has to be the case. I mean, all things, all things do, sort of come to an end. I mean, let's face it, it's the cycle of life here. Mm-hmm. It's also the cycle in professional sports. It just happens much more frequently than it does in a lot of other, fields or a lot of other endeavors. Because of the nature of the sport being violent as it is. I mean, average age of a pro football player average lifetime of a pro football player is still, only 4.5 years maybe total?
Something like that, 3 or 4 years, something like
that. Yeah, it's not long. You wouldn't think, wow, I mean, how many guys on the Patriots team have been around longer than that? But you have to realize that for every player that's been around for 6, 7, 10 years, there's probably a dozen more that, you know, get onto a roster or get onto a practice squad, right, and never make it again.
How many guys can you think of on this team now who won the last Super Bowl, the last Patriots Super Bowl in 04?
In 04?
Yeah.
Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Falk.
Yeah.
Light.
Light
would be another.
Neal.
Steven Neal. That'd be all right. That's four.
Yep.
Defensively?
Defensively, you've got, I think Will Fork was...
Was he on the team then?
I think he was. That was his draft
his first
year,
year,
I think, right? I believe he was. I'm looking up in the...
Okay, yeah, look it up. Defensively, though, I think... what about Jarvis Green?
Look him up, too. I think he might have been the year before that, actually.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're talking about what? Maybe a half a dozen, seven,
yeah,
eight guys?
My point is, look at, there's 53 men on the roster.
Right.
If 61, if you count the eight-man practice squad.
So what?
And very few
you,
of them were on the team when they
right.
last won it.
You
so
have remade
you have turnover.
This,
right.
Yeah, you have had turnover. You have remade this team. You have rebuilt the foundation. Now, so you've managed to maintain at least somewhat of a level of excellence or expectation. It's not the highest expectation, which is, you know, Super Bowl appearances every year, which is what I think, you know, a lot of fans, you know, seem to get used to. You know, talk to Buffalo Bills fans about that
right.
from back in the 90s, right?
Green was drafted in 2002.
So okay.
He's been around,
so he was
he's been around a lot longer than people might remember.
Okay.
Just lost my place there.
So that's
get,
another one. What about Will Fork?
Will Fork. I'm scrolling to the back of the media guide here with me. Bear with me for a second. Will
this,
Fork was,
this is
yeah,
the radio
2004.
Of...
This was Will Fork
okay.
was first round 2004.
Okay, so he was there. So
yeah.
Yeah, all right. So you're looking at, what is that, six guys then?
It's. I'm trying to think if there are any more than that.
Six guys, yeah.
Yeah, it's a half dozen. So, you know, look. You're right. The career of an NFL player is very short, and you see it in this team in particular. There are not a lot of guys left over from that from the last time they won a Super Bowl.
So you have rebuilt, in effect.
In
what
effect,
you've done.
Yeah. But they've maintained, like, they've still made the playoffs. They still made the AFC Championship game.
Well,
they still made
and
the Super Bowl.
And that's my point entirely. That's why I think that there are expectations that are somewhat unreasonable. Let's see if we can get a little bit of a different perspective on this. Mark Kelso covers the Buffalo Bills. He's on the Bills radio network as their analyst. Mark, it's John and Eric. How are you?
I'm well, guys. How are you doing today?
Great.
Good.
Just wanted to ask you, along the same lines, some of what we're talking about. Obviously, Bills fans had huge amounts of expectations back in the 90s when this team went to four straight Super Bowls, and the rebuilding process, I guess you could argue, is still going on, and that it was a painful process along the way. Did expectations of the fans, of the media, did they ever unfairly overexceed what the team was actually capable of doing in reality, in your estimation?
I'm sure so. I mean, the media has elevated expectations at times, but the fans have been extremely supportive, and I think they're disappointed. In Buffalo, obviously, that the Bills haven't had an opportunity. I don't know when it's been. The last time they were in the playoffs, I think, was 99, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the last real run they had, I mean, they lost the throwback game in 96, I think it was. And then the year that I left, the first year I did not play, was the 94 season. And they lost to the Steelers in Pittsburgh in a playoff game. It was actually a pretty close contest, and Bruce Smith did not play because he was in the hospital with some dehydration and flu issues. So, and they could have very easily won that game. But I think there was some patience with the fans. I think when Jim Kelly left, certainly it was tough to retool. But I really didn't hear what you guys were talking about. But I imagine you're talking about what's going on in New England now and the lack of success that they have realized this year, and disappointingly so, I'm guessing. But I don't know how you get rid of guys. I mean, I heard you say the comment about the length of careers of guys, which is absolutely true as well. But I don't know how you lose leaders in the locker room like a Vrabel and a Teddy Bruschi and a Richard Seymour, and then you lose two of the games. I mean, I thought Ellis Hobbs was a great corner, particularly in that New England scheme, and he's gone. Asante Samuel, who who is still one of the best cover corners in the league, is gone. I mean, how do you lose that many pieces to your defense and expect to, to be able to put it together? You can piece certain things together, but you can't piece an entire defense together. And I don't know, particularly the Seymour trade, I don't know what they were thinking there.
Well, join the club on that one. Some of us are still scratching our head over that one. I mean, they clearly felt like that his he had reached in his career a point of diminishing returns, and when they had somebody, you know, offer up a number one draft pick, which Oakland did, even though it's 2011, they felt like that was something they had to run with. And my thought at the time was, when this happened, that this team just, you know, mortgaged the future or the immediate future and basically gave up on a legitimate Super Bowl opportunity this year.
Well, and I think you got to look at the guys who the prolific offensive guys. I mean, you got to look at Tom, and obviously you got to look at Randy Moss, and coming off the disappointment of, you know, the undefeated season and not able to close that deal, you know, partly because of great effort by the Giants, partly because of Brady's injury, I think, that was hampered him a lot more than anybody let on, even himself. But and then he gets hurt the next year, which you think, well, okay, we'll retool and we'll make a run again. But then this year, and those guys, you know, Randy Moss is a great player and probably a future Hall of Famer, but just aren't gonna be able to stay at that same productivity level for an undetermined amount of time. I mean, eventually it's gonna, you know, the productivity is gonna fall off a little bit, and they're not gonna be able to click, and then they get some injuries on the offensive line, and things aren't gonna work there as well. And so it's just, I thought that New York or New England had a good chance. That you guys had a good chance this year. If they kept all the pieces together, but they started to tear it apart before the season even began. And you know, I don't know why. I don't make those decisions. That's why I'm in a high school and working in administration of high school instead of an NFL club.
Well, let's ask this then. Ask it this way. As someone who obviously played the game at a high level and played the game, you know, during a period of time when the franchise had a high level of success, when changes were made in the locker room, how difficult was it for the veterans who were still around to adapt and remain faithful in what the coaches and the administration were preaching to them as the best way to continue to succeed?
Well, we had some really difficult times, and it's almost as if the New England club is going through what we went through in 1988-89. We had some limited success in 88, where we made the AFC Championship game, and in 89 we started to release some of those older veterans, but we did have some seasoned guys around too. It wasn't like it was too young of a team, and it created some issues. But that was kind of, that's when we went on the great run. But then as guys kept getting taken out of the puzzle, then it just eventually you take too many people out, and I think that's what's happened there to the Patriots. I mean, you can take so many pieces out, and I think just a fabulous job in the front office of grabbing guys that were marquee or franchise players earlier in the career, and you grab them at their, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth year, and you use them sparingly in a game. You don't put too many plays on them, maybe 25, 30, 40 plays a game, so that they're not overtaxing the situation they find themselves in their career. But you get some really productive years out of those guys, and I think that was an excellent strategy. But you got to have the core guys to be able to make that happen. You got to have the offensive line. You've got to have corners that can cover. And you've got to have defensive linemen that can, particularly in that scheme, that can two gap. So it's difficult. I think it's really difficult when you start to see things continually chipping away, and then you have the lack of success like they've had this year and lost some close games, and they're looking at each other in the locker room, particularly those older guys, and saying, well, what the heck? I mean, they keep taking our pieces away, and now it's just becoming that much more difficult.
And, Mark, you talk about veterans and change coming to teams. I mean, when Buffalo signed T.O. this offseason, I think there was a lot of expectation that came along with that, you know, fairly or not. What has that experiment been like from someone who's up there and a lot closer to it than we are?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the expectation was unfair. He'll go over the 1,000 catch plateau this year, and what he needs about 100 yards before he becomes number three all time. So lofty expectations, and he had 10 touchdowns last year in Dallas. So I think they had some pretty good expectations. They needed some more playmakers offensively, but I don't think they've gotten nearly they've gotten nearly the value out of him that they thought they were going to get, and it is not because of Terrell Owens, I can tell you that. I mean, he's dropped a couple balls, but he has practiced hard. He's been a good teammate, seems to have embraced the fans in Buffalo, and they have done the same to him. But it's because they had poorer than expected quarterback play from Trent Edwards, who I think can still be a great quarterback in this league, but he did not play up to the level of expectations that they had thought going into the season. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick is a guy who's only played about 14 games in his career, and he's got some ability. He's got some really good leadership skills. Doesn't let things bother him, and has tried to work the ball to Terrell some, but he's a little limited as well. That lack of production or lack of quality play at the quarterback position has really hurt Terrell's opportunity this year, as it has hurt Lee Evans, too. I mean, there's a guy who puts up really good numbers every year, and this year I'm sure his numbers are probably lower or as low as they've been in his entire career. But I think in Terrell's situation, again, he's embraced the city, it seems like. They seem to have embraced him, and I don't think there's been any disappointment from Bills fans in that regard.
Mark Kelso, the Bills Radio Network, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Let's look at this a couple of ways. This team, the Buffalo team, has obviously changed with personnel and certainly within the coaching staff since we met back in week one of this particular season. So let's start with the coaching staff and Perry Fuel and what he has done, maybe differently from Dick Geron, to keep these guys competitive and keep them focused week to week. What are your thoughts there, Mark?
Well, a little bit of renewed enthusiasm, I think, when the change was made. I think these guys love to play for Dick Geron. I mean, he's a extremely classy gentleman, and they don't come any finer in the NFL than Dick. But he just, I don't, for whatever reason, the combination of a lot of things, not great play, not getting a ton of production out of their higher round draft picks. And they're getting great production from the offensive linemen that they drafted. And then the rash of injuries. I mean, the combination of all those three things, and I think and I guess I talk a little bit about Aaron Maben, who looks like he could be a really good player in this league, but certainly hasn't had the impact that they would have hoped, I think, here in his rookie year. But, I mean, so the combination of all those things. Now, Perry Fuel brings to the table a little bit more excitement. He's a little bit more emotional, wears on his sleeve, just a bit more on the sidelines, which I think people like. I think he brought some renewed energy to the team as well, with just a little bit of change in practice style, a little bit more. I mean, practice was very crisp under Dick, but they rarely, if ever, hit, and I think they do a little bit more of that now, just to prepare themselves for the physicality of the game. So a couple things have changed there, and I think. Perry's a very well-respected guy, a lot out of the Dick Geron mold, because Dick brought him into the league in back in Jacksonville, I think, in 97 or 98. But I think they've played well for him, and I think they played particularly well those first 2 weeks, and I think that he was starting to add to his resume. I'm sure he'll get an interview for that head job. I think he was adding to that resume, strengthening it, and then the game in Toronto, things just did not go well. They didn't really... It wasn't that they weren't prepared, but it was a short week, and they didn't come out and play like they had the previous 2 weeks. And then last week they went on and actually played pretty well in Kansas City, ran the ball, especially effectively. So, I mean, there's been some good things, and I think they'll continue to play hard for him. I think he'll spot duty some young guys to get them some experience, but I don't think he'll do that at the expense of trying to win a football game.
The other issue here is the fact that you mentioned him earlier. Ryan Fitzpatrick has now moved in for Trent Edwards at quarterback, and a little bit of why you think that move was made and how you think that move has panned out thus far.
Don't know and don't know.
That's fair.
I got to get him in a minute since I'm done with the radio. Hang on. No.
No problem.
I got one of my players has a little detention today. I got to pick him up in a little bit because he can't be released until I pick him up. But that's okay. He can wait a few more minutes. So here's nothing too bad. So we're okay there. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, why did they Why did they bench Trent Edwards? I don't know. I think he can be a very capable quarterback in this league. I mean, he started with, like, gangbusters, and then he just, at the end of last year, he's kind of playing like a second or third year player, and now, and then this year, he started out that way again, and wasn't making some reads. I think they felt, you know, Alex Gibb felt maybe in coaching staff felt he was missing some things. I can't tell you the reason, and I'm sure Trent Edwards can't either at this point, but the only thing I can probably tell you with a fair degree of certainty is that there was not consensus on him starting anyways. And as soon as the change was made from Dick Turan to Perry Fuel, they decided they were going to start Ryan Fitzpatrick, and that just tells me that there was no agreement in the building, whether it was whoever was involved in making that decision, the offensive coaches, the head coach, the GM, the scouts, I don't know. Because it's pretty crowded at the top of that organizational chart with Buffalo. But I think that sends a message that the book is closed on Trent, unfortunately, in Buffalo. And I don't know that if he's a guy that they'll keep around next year to try to compete. I think what they're trying to do now is see what Ryan Fitzpatrick gives them in a backup role going forward to next year. And then they brought in Brian Brohm, who had some pretty high credentials coming out of Louisville and was a little overwhelmed with the professional game in Green Bay, and I think they have some high expectations, but I wouldn't expect him to get any playing time going forward. And if they aren't looking at a quarterback seriously in free agency or with their top draft pick, then I can't imagine what they're thinking again. You guys ever see that movie Major League?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously he's thinking, I don't know what the heck he's thinking. Remember that comment?
Yeah.
That's a great comment. And so if they're not looking at a quarterback again, high quarterback or top pick or high free agency, I don't know what they're thinking. I would imagine that's what they're doing with the thought that maybe a young guy like a Brian Brohm could play the number three, be the number three guy, again, particularly with the productivity he had at Louisville, and a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick who can come in and give you some good minutes. And give you some good games, actually. And I guess, he's been some good, some bad. The best thing about him, like I said, is I think he has outstanding leadership qualities. I think his teammates believe that he can help lead them to victory. I think there's times when he's limited. There's times when he misses throws. He missed some throws last week. There's times when he makes some great throws, a couple deep balls to Taro and just some other throws he's made. But last week was a good indication. It's 3rd and 5 with 1:20 left against Kansas City. The Bills are winning 16-10, and they won't throw the football. They're going to run the football and try to pick up that first down because they're saying we don't want to take any chances here. And I think under different circumstances, they'd be willing to pull the trigger and try to pick up that first down and kill the game. But they weren't willing to do that. And, again, that gives you a little bit of an indication. But a great young man, and he, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, he could go out Sunday and throw a couple deep balls and put up some pretty respectable numbers, or he could go out, and if they're running the ball successfully, I think you'll see him keep it close to the vest.
Mark, one of the items that Ty Warren, our defensive lineman, brought up in the locker room discussion today was that in the first meeting, all the talk around the Buffalo offense was about their reintroducing the no huddle. And as he's watched film of late, he hasn't really seen that much out of Buffalo since Perry Fuel has taken over. You know a little something about running the no huddle with Jim Kelly back in the day. Is that a case of they just don't have the personnel to do it as effectively right now? Or is it too much to ask of the players they have to try to absorb all that information that quickly? Why do you think the reason is that they decided to pull back from the no huddle?
Yeah, I think I hate to keep saying a combination of both, but you have a lot of guys in them. I mean, Kendall Simmons, for crying out loud, he came in on a Tuesday and started on Sunday. They've had 9 different offensive line combinations, I think that's accurate, that they've started this year. And they have a lot of young guys, too. So it takes a veteran club. And if you recall, the no huddle in Buffalo was unveiled in 1990, and we had that same crop of offensive linemen, offensive personnel, since 1988. And honestly, when that was unveiled in 1990 against Indianapolis on opening day, I had no idea it was coming because they had been practicing it for years, but they never did it. And I thought, geez, they're never going to do this stuff that they keep doing in practice. And they kept it really close to the vest. But they had a veteran club, guys that really understood it. It's a completely different situation when you try to do it the way Jim Kelly and that crew did it, because those guys, You know, I would have put those offensive linemen that we had then in Buffalo up against any half marathoner. Those guys could get on the treadmill and run all day long, and even their conditioning was programmed to run that no huddle. So I think part of it's that. Part of it's that you have a lot of young guys that, again, that are still learning an offense, and you don't have time to talk about it in the huddle when you're going no huddle, and you don't have time to try to trade information at the line of scrimmage. So that's another aspect of it. And I don't, you know, I think they need to be a little bit more, conventional in regard to running the football. And you know, they can't just be wide open. And they don't have a quarterback, obviously, who's going to make as many. I mean, Jim Kelly called his plays at the line of scrimmage, and you certainly don't have that available to you. I mean, you might have somebody that can make some audibles, but again, then you're switching things different from what you called in the huddle or different from the initial play, and you're creating a lot of penalty situations too. I mean, when they continue to try to go no huddle with all these young guys in there, they're creating a lot of false start penalties, offsides penalties, offensive linemen lined up in the backfield because they didn't have their helmet up on the hip of the center. So there's a lot of issues that play into that, and I think, but the injuries and the lack of experience would probably be the two biggest reasons.
Mark, I've got one final one for you here. I saw this week, read a number that Aaron Schobel has sacked Tom Brady more than any other individual player in the NFL. Number one, why do you think that is? Number two, do you think he particularly relishes going up against the Patriots, knowing that he has an opportunity to make some plays?
Absolutely. And who's on that side? Matt, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's his side, and I think they've battled. They have some really great battles. And I mean, Aaron Schobel was still a terrific player. And, you know, he's getting up there in age too and might not have quite the burst coming off the line of scrimmage, but he's so savvy. And he does so many things that you really don't see, you know, the way he plays and run effectively. And he still has some pretty formidable pass rush techniques as well. And a lot of times getting chipped or getting doubled at the same time. So, I mean, that limits your production, I think, in the years that he was really putting up great numbers. Then a couple years he didn't put up as many, and that's probably a result of the foot injury that he had that nagged him 2 years ago and then last year caused him to miss quite a bit of the season. But I think there's some great battles. I think there's some really healthy competition that goes on there between Matt Light and Aaron. And I don't know, he seems to play well against AFC opponents and AFC East opponents in particular, and had the big play against New England in the first meeting when he intercepted that screen pass intended for Falk, I think, out on the outside. Returned that for a touchdown. So I still think he's the guy defensively. When he plays well, the team usually plays well, and then he's quietly putting together another really good year.
Sure is. Is he? Have you asked him about his TCU Horned Frogs? Is he excited?
The TCU Horned Frogs. I mentioned them to him before they played. I think their final game of the season.
Yeah.
And he goes, "The dynasty all started with me."
Wow. Started. Wow.
So I don't know. I have not spoken with him recently about the situation with the BCS and how to feed a ranking or any of that stuff. So he's a pretty quiet guy.
Good to see he's objective about it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That's awesome. Mark Kelso again on the Bills Radio Network. Mark, thanks for spending some time, and guess you better go get that young man out of detention now.
Yeah, I think he's been there long enough. They're all... Now all his teammates are coming to my office saying, "Come on, can't we get him out now? I think I got to spring him from jail or something."
Good luck with that.
Have a good day, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Mark.
Mark.
Appreciate it. Mark Kelso again handles the analysis on the Bills Radio Network, joining us here in the playbook. It's a pretty good insight, I would think. Don't you think, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially from a guy who's been with the franchise through thick and thin, through good times and bad.
Similar things to what we may be going through right now.
Exactly. And he was a contributor on offense, on special teams, all over the place. So it was good to, great analysis from Mark.
All right, let's sneak in a timeout. We'll come back and we'll let Eric read some of those emails.
Yeah, we got a couple.
Webradio@patriots.com. Yes?
Yeah, we got a couple we can shoot out there.
Shoot those out, all right.
Sure.
And we'll get an update.
Got a lot of emails.
Gillette today. A couple of them? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
See, we're going to put you to work here, E.
All right,
very good. We'll be back after this in the playbook.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots Instant Game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots Instant Game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Wednesday. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. Seems like it's been a lot longer than week one. Seems like it's been a year ago when the Patriots and the Bills last met. Of course, back in week one on September the 14th, it was a Monday night football game. First game of the year, and the Patriots had to struggle. I mean, literally, figuratively, we didn't realize that it was going to be that much of maybe an indictment on the entire season, Eric. But 25-24 seems like a long time ago, and that, I think we can all agree, is a game that the Patriots very easily could have lost.
Well, yeah, and they probably should have. They got outplayed, as even Bill Belichick admitted today, for most of the game. The Bills were the better team. It just came down to those last 5 minutes, and Brady was Brady. You know, and pulled out the two touchdowns to Benjamin Watson to win it. But that's a good point you make. I think that was sort of a, that was an omen.
It was a harbinger of things to come.
It was a harbinger for the season, and unfortunately, because it's been that way all season.
Of what?
Getting out harbinger.
A harbinger. What? Did you not graduate English class from Syracuse?
English is his second language, John.
Oh, okay,
yes.
That's right. Gotcha.
So... yeah, I mean, it's been a microcosm of the whole season.
No disrespect.
They've been outplayed in a lot of the games. They've had to come from behind in a lot of games. They've just not, you know, defensively they've given up some plays that they normally don't give up. And boy, you're right. That you really hit it on the head there. I think, John, that really was
it's a shame. I mean, we all thought, obviously, though, that, oh, you know what, this team will snap out of it. And then it went a little bit deeper the following week, obviously, with the loss, you know, to the Jets. Mm. And then you come back home and you beat Atlanta and you beat what we thought at the time was a pretty good Atlanta team. And everybody's feeling a little bit better about themselves.
Yeah.
You beat Baltimore. And then the game at Denver was the one that kind of sealed it for me. Like, okay, this team obviously is not all that we thought it was going to be, because that was a game that the Patriots just basically farted around, for lack of a better phrase. Sorry if that offends anybody. But that's exactly what they did. They just kind of toyed with Denver. Yeah, until it got to be too late to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, Dave from the Philippines writes in, and he's not, he kind of agrees with us. His expectations were pretty high. He says, absolutely, I'm disappointed in this season to date. Here are a few of my reasons. He's got about a half dozen of them here.
Okay.
One, they get Brady back and can't even get a better record than they did last year with Matt Cassel. Yeah, they can do no worse now than, no better than 11-5.
Right.
Number two, they don't appear to be getting better in December, which is the hallmark of teams that are going to do something in the playoffs. Well, there's only really been, they had a loss the first weekend in December, and now they had a win. They didn't play that great in it, but, I mean, that's progress, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If they win on the road this weekend, I think that'll be more progress. Number three, that was my little editorial comment to his number two. Number three, they've had games with far too many mental mistakes, such as four delay of game penalties in one game, a far cry from what we've come to expect out of our team. Four, they haven't won a legitimate road game at all. We've talked about that all year. Five, the in-game coaching play calling has actually cost us a win at least once, Indy. And six, they've given up large halftime leads to lose games, something they never did before. I could go on, but I think you get the idea, he says. The only reason I think they can actually win any playoff games at all is because they seem to find a way to win at home. One win is all I see for them. They haven't done anything this year that would lead me to think they can beat a good team on the road. The worst thing is that they are now going into an offseason where they will no doubt lose a lot more players, what with the number of contracts running out after the season. I think the best thing we can hope for is that we only have to endure one bad season, and then we go into the 2011 draft with a rookie salary cap in place and two really good number one picks, ours and Oakland's. Then maybe we can start to build another good quality team, assuming Tom can get back to being Tom and Bill can get back to being Bill. If they can't, well, we had a really great decade overall, and given where the franchise came from, we should all be grateful about that. Enjoy the holidays, guys. Regards, Dave from the Philippines.
Good points. I mean, you know, hard to argue with any of that. I just think that, you know, we've all, and we kind of said this at the start of the show, and he sort of reiterates for us there, we all kind of had our sights set high based on what we knew coming back in, but we've also missed on certain evaluation levels of some of the talent on this team. We've just flat out, we've missed on
rookies
it, and the coaching staff missed on
rookies
it.
Rookies and free agents.
Yeah, both. I agree. And so that's where, to me, if you're trying to rebuild this team, which it's very clear, and if it wasn't obvious when Richard Seymour was ditched at the beginning of the year, then it, you know, after, you know, you've seen the struggles of this team defensively and knowing what you thought we had and seeing what we actually do have, if it doesn't signal rebuilding to you, then I don't know what else could. It shows me that, when Bill says, well, we got to do a better job coaching, got to do a better job evaluating, whatever, he's dead on. He is absolutely dead on. And this is where these guys, and Belichick in particular, has to be held accountable for this. If, of course, this is a team that, you know, is going to be, you know, back in a true contending position anytime soon.
And your point is a valid one, because think about how many rookies not only made this team this year, made the active roster, but also contribute significantly in terms of number of minutes played and in certain key positions, starting roles and whatnot. This is a very young team. And a lot of guys are probably being asked to play positions or getting playing time that they normally wouldn't get because they would have to sit and wait behind some other veterans who'd already proven themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot. There's at least, I can think of off the top of my head, at least 9 or 10 rookies who've played, contributed significantly this year. Some have even started. And, you know, you're expecting to win a Super Bowl, but, you know, when you have a fifth of your active roster in their first year in the league, I think we kind of forget that. We tend to overlook that a little bit, and I don't think we should minimize it.
No.
But the silver lining is if they get that playing time, you hope that down the line 2-3 years from now, they've gotten, you know, experience that much quicker that, you know, maybe this year they've built a foundation for something, you know, something good for another championship run.
Well, the tough part about this is, though, is, you know, drafting for, you know, need and whether or not they decide that, you know, these guys they've got out there trying to get that experience right now are deemed expendable. And then what have you really done? It becomes a wash. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're really trying to build something, this is the problem that's just, you know, it's inherent in any kind of rebuilding job that you do. And some teams obviously have to keep doing it over and over and over again. And this is why teams develop these spirals that are very difficult to get out of unless, of course, you happen to have a lot of money and you can begin to fight your way out of it with free agency. See, I'm of the opinion you can't do this internally. You must have a franchise that's willing to spend dollars on free agents. You just have to buy the right kind of free agents, because then if you're able to get a little success, then I think you can use the draft and the combine and things along those lines, and maybe even street free agents to bolster what you've done. But you've got to have a couple of home runs in terms of the free agent aspect of the business in order to get well quickly. Otherwise, you end up with a, you know, Cleveland Browns is right. What you end up with, you know, in perpetuity. Right. And the Buffalo Bills are going through this as well. Mark Kelsall just told us, hey, it's been since 99 since they've even been in the playoffs.
Yeah.
How the hell did they pick themselves up? Well, they went out and they tried to get Terrell Owens, but they're lacking in so many other areas, they just can't sustain anything. This is hard. And so that's why when you make a conscious decision to rebuild, oh, well, we're not going to be able to have these guys forever. Well, I know that. Everybody gets old. But when you have a team that can win now, and I would still argue that this team, with Richard Seymour involved there, and maybe even Mike Vrabel to an extent, I realize Vrabel and Seymour don't seem to be doing much with their respective teams, but I think it's a different scenario if they're still in New England. You still have a team that has won, and maybe you can squeeze one more year out of them. I think you have to win while you got the chance, and while you've got guys like Brady and Moss still relatively in their primes, because 2 years from now, that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, and you've been saying that throughout the season. So
I've been very consistent with that, and this is where this team, the coaches and management, have screwed up. They have messed up. Now, everybody messes up. I mess up, you mess up, we all mess up.
Oh, sure.
So I'm not asking them to be perfect. I don't think anybody should be asked to be perfect, because that's an impossibility. What I am asking, though, is that if you're being paid to do a job and your track record indicates one way, and all of a sudden now you're like changing things for the sake of change because you just don't think you can sustain it, I don't think that is being true to who you've been or where you've been.
Mm-hmm.
That was the biggest problem that I had. This team seemed like it was building for the now, to win now. And, you know, why else go out and get some of these street free agents that, you know, apparently have chips on their shoulders? Why would you go get them otherwise unless you thought they could contribute now?
Well, exactly. Right.
You're not bringing those guys in because you think they're going to be a player 3 or 4 years from now. You're bringing them in because you think that they can contribute now. And so this year's philosophy in remaking the team has flown in the face, in my opinion, in everything that this team has done in the previous 10 years under Bill Belichick. And that's why I'm disappointed more than anything else. It's just like, okay, where did we see this change of philosophy come from? And why now, when you still have marketable, saleable, winnable commodities on your team, guys like Brady and Moss and Seymour and yada yada, you already lost big in the offseason. You know, when Rodney Harrison decided to go and obviously Teddy Bruschi decided to go, why exacerbate the problem? There's another word for you, Jason. Why exacerbate the problem?
I know that one.
Okay. Well, then why do you do that? That one just absolutely has boggled my mind, and I'm going to fail to understand any rational reason for it other than because I can. Because that's exactly what I think Belichick, if he ever answered the question, that's what I think he would say. Hmm. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Sorry for the diatribe.
No. Got to get it off your chest. It's no good keeping it all inside, John. Got to get it out. Got to let it out.
But that's what this is all about. It's all about giving our opinions based on what we witness, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, when you're covering a team day in and day out, week in and week out, you know, watching these guys, listening to what they have to say, asking questions, this is what I'm left with, you know? That's why we do what we do. Was there any report from practice today?
Yes. I broke it to the guys this way. We had good news and bad news. The good news was there were only four players who were not at practice. The bad news is they were pretty big-name players. Brady wasn't there.
Yep.
Moss, who typically doesn't practice on Wednesdays, so
that
we shouldn't read too much into that, I don't think. And then two on the defensive side, Wilfork and Warren. Wilfork we saw in disgust leave the game after he hurt himself, came back in, and then hurt himself again.
Did he re-hurt what he hurt the first time? Do we even know that?
It looked that way. It looked like he tried to go and then maybe either got rolled on or maybe just, you know.
Was it a foot injury?
It was, I believe, an ankle.
An ankle.
If I recall correctly, that's what it was.
Okay.
And you probably saw it. He tossed his helmet as the trainers were walking off of him and you know, he knew his day was over. Mm-hmm. Whether or not he, you know, comes back this week, we don't know yet, but he wasn't there today. And Ty Warren, who's also been battling some injuries on and off, he wasn't there either. So,
yeah,
Brady Moss, Will Fork, Warren.
Those are four significant
players, starters, who weren't there today. It is only Wednesday. No pads, which is, you know, they've been doing that more frequently as the season gets later and later. They haven't been going with the heavy hitting on Wednesdays. They went with the shells and the sweatpants outside in the cold, I guess, getting ready for what's expected to be a cold game day up in Buffalo.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, and that was pretty much it.
All right. Well, I don't know that we read into anything about, you know, Brady other than, you know, we know that last week apparently he was
game time decision.
Questionable right up to game time.
Yep.
That they were seriously considering not playing him.
Yeah, and Bill talked about that today a little bit, saying that, you know, we kind of expected him to play, but, you know, up until a few minutes before the game, we weren't really 100% sure, which I think is kind of, you know, a little surprising that he would be that candid about that. Which brings up, you know, the case. Does the offense change significantly if that happens? Does Hoyer come in and just pick right up and they run the same plays that they did if Brady were in there, or do they do something different? Do they have, you know, sort of a plan B if Brady can't go? And you know, one of our listeners wrote in. You know, we get a lot of listeners who write in from this place, John. I don't know if you know where this is. It doesn't say where. Do you know where that is? Do you know where Doesn't Say Where is?
No.
I don't either. But a lot of people write from there. Sean from Doesn't Say Where.
It Doesn't Say Where. Okay.
Writes in Edelman.
Is that somewhere in the UK?
It could be. Maybe it is. Edelman, stand back. Why not some form of a wildcat? Nothing big, maybe 20 yards down the field to Moss on an out pattern or something. But he brings up a good point. What if Brady weren't to go this weekend or last weekend? You know, what if Brady's not there and you have rookie undrafted free agent Brian Hoyer as your starting quarterback? Do you mix in some other trick plays, gadget plays? Do you do something different? I don't know. I think it's an interesting thought.
Well, you know, first of all, my initial reaction would be, is if by some chance Brady didn't go, that I don't necessarily think they dumb things down, and I use that term loosely, obviously, for Brian. That's unfair to him. But at the same time, I don't think that they expect him to do the same things that Tom would do, i.e. throw the deep ball to Randy Moss. Now, you may do that once or twice to make sure that the defense, you know, at least has the idea in their head, hey, they're not afraid to go deep here. But, you know, I could certainly see him and the team trying to play it more closely to the vest. That concerns me, however, because, frankly, I think the play calling on offense has been putrid to begin with. I think it's been very weak, very unimaginative, and very predictable.
That's the lament we're hearing a lot lately.
If you're going to get more predictable because you're trying to keep things simple for your backup quarterback to play, yikes is all I'm going to say. Because, frankly, you know, they were fortunate, you know, against Carolina last week. And, you know, Buffalo is obviously going to have at least a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, considering that, you know, they haven't beaten the Patriots in 33 years. At least that's what it seems like.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they've got absolutely nothing to lose. They are not going to the postseason. Perry Fuel and Mark Kelso already told us this today. He's got the whole energy thing going, and that's been sort of a refreshing thing for the guys in the clubhouse. Here's a guy that is coaching, maybe for his coaching life. He's auditioning on the run here for the permanent head coaching job at Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And what better way, you know, to, you know, make, you know, sale points with Ralph Wilson than to get a win over the Patriots.
Yeah. No,
so,
absolutely.
Frankly, if anybody thinks that the Bills are going to just roll over, I think you're nuts. I think the Patriots are going to have their hands full
game,
and
sure.
then some.
I totally agree. I don't think any game down this stretch is going to be a gimme anymore.
No.
This
team is no longer capable of mailing in a gimme. They can't do it.
No, not at all. And there's no fear factor on the opponent's side.
Precisely the point, which gives teams, I think, even more of a reason to come in with a little more swagger, you know, a little bit more confidence coming into the game and say, hey, you know what, we can beat you, and that would be a nice feather in our cap, and we're not doing this, or we're not doing that, but we can beat you. And, you know, this is, you know, our first game of next year, and we're going to send a message. And, you know, guys do think like that. Players do think like that. And so if the Patriots, you know, frankly, nothing would surprise me, and a loss to Buffalo this weekend would not surprise me.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, John. I really do. Like I said, I don't have the confidence that I once had this year in this team anymore. They have to go on and prove it. If they come out and play flat for a full half or three
like they
quarters,
did against Carolina?
Yeah, I don't think they can afford to do that on the road.
Not on the road.
And expect to pull out a win like they did in week one at home at the end. I mean, that's...
Not on the road.
Yeah, and at this point, they shouldn't have to... they shouldn't have to play a game like that.
They shouldn't.
They should be. They should know what kind of team they have on both sides of the ball. You know, we're way past that point where you've figured out your identity for the year. Like you said, each year is its own individual entity, and each year teams develop different identities. And they really haven't to this point.
Not this team.
Unless you consider their identity to be a team that's in transition, or that's, you know, that's. The way we've described it, it's no longer the team that puts fear into anybody. It's no longer the team that can take any wins for granted. If that's their identity, well, that may be the reality of it, but that's not what people expected going into
it. I think you're right. I actually think that is this team's identity, that it is a team and a franchise in transition. And, you know, when you're in transition and you're trying to rebuild a little bit, retool, whatever, there are growing pains. There are, you know, sometimes you have to get worse before you get better, i.e. read into that higher draft picks, you know?
Yep.
And I hope that the philosophy, though, in terms of going after free agents stays the same, although, frankly, I'm not so sure that, you know, I mean, let me ask you this real quick. I know you got to run, but I just – next year being the potential, you know, uncapped salary year.
Yep.
Do you really see that as a possibility happening?
See what exactly?
That teams can basically go in and spend whatever they want?
Well, here's the thing, though. It will probably only be for a year. I would imagine that any agreement that they make with the labor union is going to, you know, going forward after next year, is going to include a cap.
Which is why then you'd see a bunch of guys going for one-year deals. Grabbing all they could.
Right. You might see that, or you might see teams who have expensive veterans cutting them in the uncapped year so that they don't have to take as much of a cap hit. You know what I'm saying? Like if they're in the last, if that's the last year, you might say, oh, let's cut him now. That way we don't have to take a big hit as far as our salary cap going forward. You might see that happening. But yeah, I don't think you're going to see too many, you know, outrageous record setting contracts, because what if, you know, the next year they come back with the agreement that the salary cap is now $50 million less than just that guy's contract? All of a sudden the team is strapped and they have, you know, they can't do anything. I don't think they can afford to take that risk.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting, I guess, conundrum that you know, teams everywhere are going to end up, you know, having to kind of place themselves through.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting offseason, I think. One of the more interesting ones we've had in a while, just because of all the uncertainty surrounding the labor issue. And
so how does a team go about rebuilding itself, you know? I mean,
that's a great question. It's uncharted. It's kind of like going back to pre-salary cap, which was, what, 92?
Yeah.
Right, roughly around there?
Yeah.
When the salary cap, 92, 93, somewhere
92,
around there?
92, yeah. And gets back to my original, you know, beef today was, you know, why the hell don't you win when you know you can?
Yeah.
And this team has obviously decided to go ahead and mortgage, you know, the present for the future.
Yeah.
And when you don't really know what the future is going to be, that absolutely makes no logical sense to me at all. I'd really like for somebody to explain, Lucy, what exactly is going on here. And by the way, if you know the explain Lucy bit right there, then you are old like I am.
I love Lucy.
Very good, Eric. Very good.
Or you watch TV Land.
No, I didn't,
TV Land's great, by the way.
I didn't watch I Love Lucy when it was airing at the time.
Oh, really? You don't say.
Not that old.
I did.
Well, that's why I wasn't gonna lump you into that, John.
No, back in the 40s with Paul.
Yeah, Paul was around back then, too.
Yeah, Paul was. That's true.
Well, I got to get back upstairs, my friend.
All right, man. Thanks.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
Eric Scalavino, PFW. All right, we'll take the break here, and we'll come back, continue with you. And we've got some, I believe we've got some interviews coming up at some point in time in this hour from the Bills. We're going to get to that. Got some thoughts on the matchups themselves coming up this Sunday between the Patriots and the Bills inside the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited, but only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted!
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan!
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am?
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots Banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots Banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You got?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. and Bank of America N.A. member PIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shaped serving trays.
Welcome back as we're inside hour number two of the playbook here on Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook. The Patriots winning streak continues. It is 12 straight wins. Be official over the Buffalo Bills. You have to go all the way back to opening day of 2003, September 7th, 2003, to find the last Buffalo Bills win over the New England Patriots. That, of course, was the 31-0 Lawyer Malloy game, where the Patriots let Malloy go right after the preseason was over. He gets picked up by Buffalo. He's on the other side of the field, and Patriots get whacked. And, of course, the Patriots go on and win the Super Bowl that year. But, nevertheless, that was the last time that the Bills won. Since then, it has been 12 straight, and the Patriots have won big, and they've won close. Of course, they rebounded later that season and put another 31-0 licking on the Bills to even things out in 03. And then, you know, you've had a 35-7 win. 2 years ago, you had a 56-10 win. You had a 19-17 win in 2006. You had a 20-10 win last year, relatively close, and obviously 25-24 earlier this year. So you've had big wins and you've had close wins, and yet 12 in a row is how it's added up. And to have that kind of a streak going in this day and age when, again, generally speaking, all things are pretty equal, I think is remarkable in the National Football League. Now, you know, maybe that has something to do with, you know, being a divisional opponent and, you know, and getting a chance to play them twice, therefore being more ready for them. I mean, there's probably something to that. It seems to be, you know, what Bill Belichick's style has been like. You know, somebody gets you the first time, he's going to, you know, coach the team up and come back and get you the next time. And he's just gotten on a little bit of a roll here with these teams. Belichick, by the way, overall 17-2 as a head coach of the Patriots against the Buffalo Bills. 17-2. You can't tell me that New England is a team that the Bills don't care any more about than anybody else in the division or anybody else on their schedule. Because when you get whacked like that, like the Patriots have done to them throughout his entire tenure, you know, after a while, you know, you're not going to like getting whacked anymore. You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if this game, especially after the, you know, week one close call, a game which I think we can all, you know, admit now that, you know, the Bills outplayed the Patriots. Patriots were fortunate enough to win the game. But that this game, this date, this Sunday was circled on calendars everywhere in upstate New York, in Buffalo specifically, as being, you know, the potential to, you know, try to even it up a little bit. Now, they're obviously not going to make up, you know, 12 games or, you know, 6 years of frustration, you know, in one weekend. Especially not when you have, you know, a coaching change like they have, quarterback change like they have. They've had some injury problems as well. They've sputtered on offense. They've been inconsistent on defense. But, you know, defense, though, is where, you know, they have at least been able to stay in games somewhat themselves. Aaron Schobel has owned Matt Leit and Tom Brady. Why that happens in professional sports, I don't know. I don't know why that happens, but it just does, and that's one of those individual matchups that definitely does not favor New England. And if you're struggling, although I would say that the offensive line is actually one of the parts of this team that is not struggling, not like others right now anyway, you have to hope that somehow, some way, they can just do enough to keep, you know, Brady standing upright and his jersey clean and, you know, keep a guy like Schobel away from him as much as you possibly can. You know, the funny thing is I kind of read into some of the series history between, you know, these two teams earlier. The funny thing is that Buffalo has also had similar success in this series against the Patriots. And we talk about how, you know, oh, wow, 12 in a row. I mean, good grief. That's like never happens. Well, longtime Patriot fans will probably remember that, you know, during the O.J. Simpson era, the Buffalo Bills had a strong success rate against the Patriots. In fact, I'm looking here. It's 1971 through 1975. The Bills won 9 in a row over the Patriots during that time. The Jim Kelly years. Jim Kelly, when he was quarterback of the team, they won 11 out of 13. From 1988 through 1994. And, of course, this was the Mark Kelso time as well. As we spoke with him in the opening hour of the program, he was a player on those very successful Buffalo teams at that time. And so, you know, Kelso knows what it's like to be able to dominate. And why that happens sometimes is, you know, inexplicable. It's just one of the great unexplained things in sport. It just kind of happens. You get on a bit of a roll, and guys get things in their head, and somehow the run just continues. I would wonder out loud, though, here, what does it take in some of these instances? Try to compare these things. What does it take to stop a streak like that? What, I mean, does it take a significant occurrence in a game? Does it take a lackluster performance from the team that has done the dominating? See, in my own opinion, I think that reason more than anything else is probably an overriding factor in one team's dominance stopping. That the team that's doing the winning, the team that's doing the beating, they just kind of lose interest. Really, through no fault of their own, I think it's just a matter of human nature almost. You go into a situation where you're saying, oh, it's Buffalo, oh, we beat them 12 times in a row, and you just don't have that edge Maybe you don't spend that extra hour looking at film, or maybe you don't, you know, hit quite as hard in practice, or maybe you don't go over that one play in special teams that ends up costing, you know, a touchdown or what have you in the game that next week. I'm just saying, it's human nature. Because when you get on a roll and you feel like you can get by, you do try to get by. That is also human nature. That's why we're all imperfect beings here. We all will try to get by and do more with less. Shoot, that's the way our economy is right now. We're trying to do more with less. Nobody ever wants to spend the extra money, take the extra time, do the little things. The teams that do the little things are usually the teams that win in the long run. And I'm just saying, it's harder to do the little things when you dominate over one team for an extended period of time. I think logic kind of dictates that, doesn't it? So that's why I'm very concerned about Sunday, because this Patriots team has won 12 in a row. This Patriots team is struggling. They were completely flat against Carolina. What are they going to come out like on Sunday in Buffalo? It's probably, you know, I'm almost sorry that Buffalo isn't in position to play for the playoffs here, because that would at least give the Patriots, I think, maybe a little bit of an edge here, knowing that Buffalo is fighting for something, and they're really not. Let's see if we can get the answers to some of those particular questions and or pontifications. Perry Fuel, who moved in for Dick Geron in the middle part of this season as head coach in Buffalo, he met on the conference call with members of the Patriots media earlier this afternoon.
I guess I'll throw out the first question. I guess the obvious one. I mean, last time the Bills and Patriots played, Dick Geron was a head coach, and obviously you kind of stepped in there now as the interim coach. What challenges have you faced in accepting this role?
Oh, just getting a team ready each week to play football, and then just administratively, you know, communicating with trainers, you know, coaches, players, you know, doing the whole gamut of the communication process from a head coach perspective, as well as still calling the defense.
In terms of trying to put your stamp on this, I mean, I know that there was a lot of ambitious things that Coach Geron wanted to do in terms of the no-huddle offense. You know, then he went through some personnel change in the staff. Have you tried not to reinvent the wheel here and taking over and just trying to keep things, or have you made, you know, wholesale changes to the structure of the offense, defense, what have you?
No, not a lot of wholesale changes. You know, basically just getting our team prepared to play every week, you know, doing what we think we do best and getting our team to play every week.
How nervous were you, if at all, during that first day when the move was made and you had to go address the team now as the head coach instead of the coordinator?
Well, I don't know. I guess I don't know if I was nervous. I was excited more than being nervous. You know, I've coached for 25 years, and I've often wanted to be a head football coach. So I've tried to prepare myself for the opportunity. The way the situation occurred was out of my control, but probably more excited than nervous.
I'm sure the biggest challenge, or maybe the biggest obstacle you were thinking about, was making sure that you took control of that locker room. Was that something that you were thinking about in your mind at all?
You know, I had a pretty good communication with all the players, and so the biggest thing was, you know, hey, were we all going to be on the same page? Were we all going to row in the same direction? And so that was one of the things that I addressed in our team meeting. But besides that, you know, I thought that if I just got the team ready to play that next week, which was the Jacksonville week, that everything would be okay.
Can you describe what Jairus Byrd does for you guys, what roles you put him in?
You know, I just think he's a young man that's continuing to mature as a football player. You know, we would like for him to continue to get more reps and see the field you know, through the eyes of a free safety, because he was a corner in college. But he's been an extremely productive ball hawk in our defense. And, you know, he's made his mark right now in the league by being able to attack the ball in the air and intercept the ball. And he has tremendous hands. So, you know, we like those things in him.
So when he's intercepting all those passes, how is he getting it done? Is he physically beating receivers? Is he mentally sort of beating the quarterback, or how is he getting them?
I think he just has that good sixth sense. You know, I think, you know, he's been in the right position at the right place at the right time, and you know, sometimes in this game it's good to have a little luck.
Perry, I know, you know, obviously, you know, and I think I read some stuff after the Kansas City game, how this was a, how this really was a dream come true for you, being in this position and everything else, and it's been a goal of yours for a long time. A little weird for you getting a, kind of having that dream come true in an unconventional way and really not having a whole lot of job security attached to it?
You know, whether you're whether you have a new contract coaching or you don't have a new contract coaching, we're kind of day-to-day, we're week-to-week, we're year-to-year, so job security, you know, we don't really think about. You know, we focus and we accept the opportunities that are presented to us. And so this opportunity was presented to me, and so with that, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm enjoying the experience. I'm enjoying the players, and I enjoy competing on Sundays.
Your quarterback obviously went to Harvard, and I'm sure there's been some talk about, you know, how rare that is. How nerdy is he?
No comment.
Perry, in what way, though, has he been a spark to this offense?
That was a pretty good question. I like that one.
Thank you. Perry, in what way has he been a spark to your offense, though?
You know, I've liked his leadership, his command. You know, I've liked his communication with not only the offensive line, but the running backs and the receivers, as well as the coaching staff. And so, you know, that's been good, and that's been something we can draw on.
Harry, in regards to your run defense, can you point to one area as to why it struggled at times this year?
You know, I think consistency with our personnel. You know, not just like everybody else, we've gone through a number of injuries on the defensive side of the football, and just having consistency in our people being there each and every week has been one of the problems.
Bill Belichick had just mentioned earlier today that he thought that it had been pretty good for the most part, but just giving up big plays has been a big issue. I know, like, Jamal Charles had a 77-yard run touchdown this year, last week or whatever it was. Do you see giving up big plays as a big problem?
It's always a big problem, be it in the air or on the ground. That is a big problem, and you know, we work each week to try to eliminate that.
One thing that I don't know how much of a specific look you've gotten at the Patriots' defense, but they did change some stuff up last week. Went a lot simpler. Went with, I think, fewer plays. Did you see a change from what they did last week to what they've done previous weeks?
Well, as I look at them, I'm always amazed each week at what they do, how they do, and how efficiently they do it. Scheme-wise and the little things that they do, I really can't comment on because, again, I'm looking at both sides of the ball, and I'm evaluating their talent. Mm-hmm. I'm evaluating, you know, how they play the game and how we can take advantage, if we have any advantages, of their defense. So, you know, that's an area that when Coach, you know, he puts in a different game plan, it seems like, every week, and he's a master at doing that.
What then do you look at as the strengths of their defense?
I thought their defensive ends are really good. I love Gerard Mayo. I think he's an exceptional football player. And I think they're secondary. Those guys, they run and they hit. I was very impressed with the safeties, the way they attack and hit and tackle. And, you know, the Patriots have a pretty good tackling team, in my opinion. And so those are the things that impressed me about that football team defensively.
Gary, it was a long, long time ago that first week. But can you guys draw some confidence off the fact that, really, aside from a couple of sort of strange plays at the end of the game, that really, I mean, they could have won that game?
You know, that seemed like it was many moons ago. You know, even though we played, at the beginning of the season, it seemed so long ago that I don't think so. We just moved from week to week, you know, and so we missed an opportunity to win a football game in that first week of the season, and, you know, now we're just focused on this week.
Have you checked out the weather forecast? I remember last year that game was about 8 mile an hour winds, anything like that coming for Sunday?
You know, I briefly looked at it, but I'm not exactly sure because here in Buffalo, the weather changes every day. And so we went outside for a little while today, and it was a little windy, but it was supposed to snow, and the sun's shining right now. So who knows what happens in Buffalo with the weather.
Wanted to ask you your thoughts on Terrell Owens and how you feel he's been performing. I know a lot of people will get excited about any time Terrell and Randy Moss will be on the same field together.
Well, both guys are excellent receivers. They're some of the two of the top receivers in the league, and both are really great competitors. I think, you know, when given the opportunity, Terrell's performed well for us, and he's a guy that he loves to compete. He loves to win at his position. He likes to get it right, and he strives for excellence. And I'm sure Randy's the same way. And so when you have two high-profile receivers like that on the field, it makes an exciting day.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but quite a bit of discussion over the last few days about Randy and his performance against the Carolina Panthers. From what you saw in that game specific to Randy, what did you see from his effort in that game?
I'm not going to comment on that. I think Randy Moss is one of the most prolific receivers in this league, and he can go whenever he wants to go. And, sometimes you have good games and sometimes you have bad games.
Barry, I know you obviously haven't coached, and I believe you coached defensive backs in the past. Do you think that Terrell and Randy, if in any ways their entrance into the league in the 90s changed what that position is, the receiver position?
Could you ask that again? I'm sorry.
Do you think that in any way Randy and Terrell's entrance into the league in the 90s and the way that they've been able to perform has changed the receiver position at all?
You know, there have been some really good receivers in the 90s as well as in this era. And so with the Chuck rule, I think that changed a lot of things. And, you know, the way the game is called and officiated now, I think that's changed some things for receivers, period. But guys like that who are tall, big, and fast, who can catch the short pass and go the distance or can beat you deep, that definitely changes the way the game is played.
Have you had any background with Coach Belichick? He was talking today, just going back to your history. I think he mentioned you in Jacksonville, and just curious if you've had it cross paths with him at all.
We competed against Coach Belichick when I was in Jacksonville. I was there for 5 years with Tom Coughlin. I had the opportunity to meet Coach Belichick when I was at Vanderbilt University, and he was on a scouting trip, and had the pleasure of clinicking and talking with him about defensive back play. I've always admired him, studied some of the things he's done throughout his career. We've never worked together or coached together, but, in your coaching career, you look at people and you like some of the things that they do and you try to emulate those things.
You were at Vandy from, I think, 95 to 97. Do you remember what he was out there scouting? Was it a specific player? Was it just sort of part of the standard pre-draft process or anything like that?
If I'm not mistaken, he was he came by to look at a player we had named Corey Chavis at the time. And, of course, he was looking at some other players also, but I think specifically Corey Chavis.
And you mentioned just talking to him about different concepts. Did anything stand out to you from just the time that you spent together?
Oh, definitely. I mean, things that he said to me, I still apply to today.
Anything specific?
I won't get into the specifics.
Not this week? All right. That's great, Perry.
Thanks, Perry.
Thank you so much. All right. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Perry Fuel, who is the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, has his team with a 2-2 record since he took over as head coach. If you'll recall, Buffalo had lost an 18-15 game at Jacksonville in his debut. Then, of course, had a home win over Miami, which turns out to be a sort of a favor to the Patriots in retrospect, right? Lost to the Jets in that game in Toronto up at the Rogers Center, up at the Dome. Then won last week 16-10 against Kansas City, so the team is 2-2 since he took over as head coach. And something he referred to in one of the questions in there, talking about the rush defense, which obviously has been the sore spot for the Bills defensively, sore enough to where it's dead last out of 32 teams in the NFL, as they're giving up on about 171 yards a game on the ground. 171. Wow. you know, honestly, I guess you don't really recall it being that bad, but it probably gets that way because teams are, you know, moving the ball or running out the clock against the Bills in a lot of instances. Total defense, they're not near as bad. In fact, pass defense, they're fifth best in the league. Only giving up 189 yards through the air per game. I don't know if that's because teams choose to grind it out on Buffalo, or if you know, it's a like I said, strictly almost a running out the clock type of situation. But Buffalo has proven somewhat porous rush defensively, and you know, since the Patriots have had a little bit better performance from Lawrence Maroney and company, and a little healthier at the running back spot with Sammy Morris having returned over the last couple of weeks, you know, that might be an opportunity there. If, and it's a large if, but if by some chance Tom Brady does not go, and I personally believe that he will. If he went last week, he probably would go this week unless something else happened in practice. But if he didn't, then that would certainly you know, provide, I think, Brian Hoyer an opportunity to play things closer to the vest and see if they can't move the ball on the ground. It is, at the very least, for the Patriots, an opportunity for Lawrence Maroney to continue to improve and continue to sort of do the PR spin on his career here in New England. I know he's got another year left on his deal. I think we were all pretty much ready to give up on him. And then the last few weeks, he's actually been presentable, respectable, adequate. And even in a couple of instances, he's been good. And I don't mean that to be flip or anything. I'm just saying that that's my observation that, you know, well, you know, I have certainly been one to rag on him when he's been down. I've also tried to give him, you know, his due when things have gone well. You know, he had 94 yards rushing this last week on 22 carries. That's his best, his second best mark, you know, of the season. And if he's got an opportunity to do that against a team that is not noted for its rush defense, like Buffalo is not this year, then opportunity is going to present itself, and a guy like Maroney should probably be licking his chops a little bit. But overall, 32nd against the rush, 5th in the NFL against the pass, and that equates to 24th in total defense out of 32 teams. They're giving up right at 360 yards per game of total offense to opposing teams. So you get a little bit of a picture how the Patriots could potentially be thinking about attacking Perry Fuel's team, as Fuel was, of course, the defensive coordinator before moving up into Dick Geron's job as head coach. And he's, again, led them to a fairly respectable record at 2-2 since taking over as head coach of the Bills. And as I mentioned to Eric Scalavino earlier, why wouldn't you earmark this game? Why wouldn't you circle this one in big red ink on the calendar? Because if you can get a win where Dick Geron never could, and you can break a 12-game losing streak against a divisional opponent, no less, don't you think that would score major points with Ralph Wilson and anybody else who cares to listen in Buffalo? The court of public opinion is always a strong one. I think it would go a long way toward, you know, considering him, you know, for the permanent job. If he doesn't win it, my guess is they probably make a move, and probably look at bringing, you know, another big name in somewhere, which, you know, obviously it's been rumored that, you know, Ralph Wilson has already talked to guys like Shanahan and Holmgren, who apparently have given them the thumbs down, at least to this point in time. And my guess is that soon gets revisited. If it isn't currently being visited as we speak, it'll soon be revisited once the season is finally completed here within the next 3 weeks for Buffalo. But this could certainly, a win over the Patriots, he could certainly make a strong case for keeping the job full-time. Let's pause here for another timeout, and then we will also come back and let you hear from Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is the new man under center, or in the shotgun formation, whichever you think is appropriate here, for the Buffalo Bills at quarterback since taking over. And I think you'll find, as we'll hear from him coming up, I think you'll find that there is a renewed effort to get T.O. the ball, especially since he's taken over quarterback. We'll talk about that coming up inside the playbook.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's gone! It's gone!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of 3 flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Inside the playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with you. We'll get to Ryan Fitzpatrick here in a couple of moments. Apologies for the email problems of my ISP provider here. So we're going to let, you know.
Don't bash them. They're a sponsor.
Huh?
Don't bash them. They're a sponsor.
Did I say the name of
no,
my provider?
Didn't. I know.
Okay. I'm not going to. Although now we've told everybody, I mean, all you have to do is listen to some of these commercials. You'll be able to figure it out pretty well. I'm just like, hey, I don't know. Who knows? Trucks are probably working in the stinking area, and it just happens from time to time. So what are you going to do? So you know what, Doc, why don't we let you open up the email inbox and see what the folks have had to say here today and see if anything in particular is good. We were kind of openly talking about how expectations in the opening hour of the program with Eric – how I thought expectations were maybe set a little bit too high and that we're all guilty of that, and whether or not maybe they shouldn't have been reset in hindsight, and see if we can get some folks to kind of sound off on that a little bit.
All right. First one we got here is from Thomas in Portland.
Yep.
Hey, John, just wanted to know if anyone else noticed Vollmer not only switching between tackle positions throughout the game, but he also moved into Neal's right guard position in the fourth quarter. He played college for my hometown, so I love him anyway. But what do you think? Do you think he's talented enough to play all those positions, or is it a lack of depth?
I think he's talented enough to play all those positions. I think that's why we also saw, for a brief while, Light at left tackle and Vollmer at right tackle. And frankly, I think that's the best line there is. I have to admit that I am, you know, quickly becoming a fan as well on the offensive line of Dan Connolly. And even though Connolly technically is a backup for either Mankins or Stephen Neal, I think Dan Connolly is a pretty solid player. He can also, and has this year in an injury situation, has also backed up Dan Copen. So Dan Connolly has, I guess, become the de facto Russ Hochstein, you know, the guy that could basically play any position on the offensive line. And I think the Patriots' offensive line may be at its best if you have Connolly in for Neal, and I'm not really trying to take away from Stephen Neal, but frankly, he's been banged up a lot this year, and I'm wondering what his shelf life might actually be in a Patriots uniform. So if Connolly steps in at right guard and you put Vollmer at right tackle, I think, and then you obviously have Logan Mankins and Matt Light, who still clearly got some, you know, life left in his legs as well, as we've seen since he's come back from injury this year. I think that may be the Patriots' best offensive line with those five guys involved. Copen, and then the guards being Connolly and Mankins, and then the tackles being Vollmer and Light. Short of that, I think, you know, Vollmer did a better than respectable job subbing for Matt Light at left tackle. And I'm sure they wouldn't hesitate to flip him over there if they thought he could. And maybe that's also one of the other things they're trying to do, is that one of the things that they've always tried to do is they've tried to build versatility in the offensive line. They've done a very good job with that. And I think a lot of that credit has to go to Dante Scarnecchia, who's been around, well, I like the kid, and actually I don't think this is kidding. I think Dante's the only guy that's been inside that organization longer than I have.
Going back to the 40s of Paul.
Yeah, well, maybe. Close. But Dante obviously was a, you know, he was an interim head coach for a while. Dante was an assistant under Ray Berry back in the late 1980s. So he's been around for 20-plus years as an assistant on this staff. And he's one of the great assistant coaches, I think, in the National Football League. And I know he's highly respected throughout the league. And I think the versatility that he helps coach and helps build within that offensive line is one of the reasons why the Patriots have been able to stay as competitive for as long as they have. You can't lay this at the feet of the offensive line, at least not right now. While they may not have been as spectacular this year as they have been in the past, I think they've done a pretty good job overall of keeping Brady's jersey clean and developing younger players, Vollmer being one, Connolly being the other. So hopefully that answers the question.
Oh, Thomas continues here. The other thing I noticed was a great hustle play by Burgess, his first of the year. The play right after his sack, he looked like he might get a second, but Moore dumped it to the back. Then out of nowhere comes Burgess from behind to make the tackle. Mm-hmm. Maybe sending some of these guys home was good for them. Put AD on IR so he can't infect everyone else, and let's see what happens. Love the show and have a great Christmas. Jason, awesome. Too.
All right, very good. Yeah, good phone call. Good phone call. You've got the phone call. Good email. That's all good. They're all very good and legitimate observations. It's all legitimate stuff. So I like the fact, though, that, you know, sometimes we can't, you know, see the forest for the trees, and then a lot of fans are able to pick things up or go off of what we're talking about. So, you know, so it's all good. All right, you got another one there?
Yeah, got another one here from Chris in Seattle.
Go.
Amazing to think that if this team ends up at 11-5, big if, I know, we will have won our division and possibly even get a 3 seed. Is a 2 seed still mathematically possible? I don't think so. By contrast, last year's team went 11-5 and didn't make it in. I remember how bitter I was last year because I thought we had a solid playoff team with a very confident, accurate passer in Castle, a strong defense, and a well-rounded running game. Now I feel we have a weaker team in each of these categories. Yes, I think Castle was stronger at the end of last year than Brady at the end of this one, but a much higher seeding. Strange. Yeah. And he predicts Patriots 24, Bills 23. We may give up a safety in this one.
Ooh. Well, actually, I can't say that I disagree with that prediction either. I think it'll be very close. Of course, you know, Andy will probably say Patriots by double digits. But, no, I think this will be very close. And I think your comments are dead on. I haven't had much reason to argue or disagree with anybody today. It doesn't make for very good talk radio, does it? But it's true. I mean, it's true. 24-23 is about right. I'll have to think about it a little bit more. Frankly, I'm a little concerned whether or not the Patriots can actually score 24. I think the 23 that the Bills might put up, they put up 16 at Kansas City last week. That's probably about right. It might be a little lower scoring than that. I'd be willing to go more like 20-17. You know, maybe 20-17. Like, you know, last week's game was 20-10. Maybe 20-17. Something 20-18, right in the run of that range. And yeah, certainly a safety could be possible. All right, let's get now to the other interview that we have for you. Ryan Fitzpatrick obviously has taken over as quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, in supplanting Trent Edwards in that position. And one of the things that he has done is he has found Terrell Owens more often than Edwards ever did. To that end, since Fitzpatrick has been the quarterback. He has thrown 17 completions to Terrell Owens in the three games since he's moved in, whereas in the previous nine games, Owens had only caught 26 passes overall. So 17 in three as opposed to 26 in nine. So he's definitely willing to find T.O., Terrell Owens, more often than Edwards was willing to go upfield, and I think that's probably has a lot to do with the reason that Fitzpatrick is in there at quarterback now instead of Edwards. So we'll get some of his thoughts, not only on that relationship, but going up against the Patriots, as he spoke with members of the Patriots media from Gillette Stadium a short while ago.
Good. So what's been the biggest challenge for you leading this team since you took over at quarterback?
I think the moving parts is the fact that we've had guys shuffling in and out of the lineup. You know, just being able to develop that continuity, the consistency that goes along with playing with each other. But the thing is that we've battled every week, and it's a fun group of guys to play with because you know that they're going to give you everything they have. But I would say just the continuity, which has probably affected our consistency a little bit.
How did last year in Cincinnati help you this year? Is it very similar to you?
It helped me a ton in terms of getting on the field, obviously, and getting the 12 starts, getting all that action, learning how to prepare for a game, the importance of, you know, studying the opponent week to week and really being on the same page with your guys. But it's a lot different this year for me. Last year, you know, the circumstance was injury, and it was kind of a question mark as to whether Carson was coming back for most of the year. Whereas this year, you know, they've handed me the reins, and you know, I'm gonna play as long as I continue to play well.
Hey Ryan, how difficult has it been? I mean, going through all this with an interim coach and everything else, and I'm assuming most everybody in that locker room had never been through an in-season coaching change. What kind of challenges does that bring?
It's tough. I mean, it's just something, though, that is part of the NFL life, and you just have to go with it and roll with it and just continue to play hard. I went through a similar deal in St. Louis when I was there, and Coach Martz had his heart ailment, ended up, you know, being gone for the season, and Joe Vitt took over as interim coach. So, and we've got some guys that have been through it, but to be honest with you, as the season goes, as you're so focused on the opponents every week, you just kind of move on. And it feels like right now that Perry's been our coach for the year, you know, the whole year, just in terms of we haven't really changed the way we prepare and the way we're practicing and all that.
I would think, though, that one way or another, the idea is to promote change by doing something like that, especially as early as it happened with you guys. Do you think that it gave the team any kind of spark or anything like that? Because, you know, I've heard it can go one of two ways. It can give you a spark, or it can, you know, make the team implode.
Well, everybody, I think we were shocked when it happened. Everybody really respected Coach Duran and the way that he coached, the way that he treated you as a man. But like I said, we had to move on. We were just kind of forced to do it. And Perry has brought energy and enthusiasm. And I think, like you said, just change. And, you know, sometimes change is a good thing.
Did you have, going to college in this area for 4 years, did you have any dealings or any ties with any of the Patriots? Did you run into any of them at all?
No. I mean, I went to a practice once. Jameel Soriano was on the practice squad. He was one of my linemen at Harvard. So I went to a practice once and got to eat the meal when all the players were there and stuff, but I didn't know any of them, no.
Did you get to run into Brady?
What's that?
Did you run into Brady?
No.
What was the whole experience like playing at Harvard and for Timmy Murphy there, Ryan?
It was awesome. Coach Murphy's a great guy, great coach. And I really respect him, still keep up with him and talk to him a lot. He taught me a lot, not only about football and playing quarterback, but being a man and the family man that he is, the leader that he is. I really respect the heck out of him, and I loved playing there. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. I met my wife there. There are a lot of good things that came from me going to Harvard, and I certainly wouldn't trade it for anything.
I know the game is obviously in Buffalo, but is there any special meaning for this week, given that you played a team like the Patriots that you were around for 4 years and you sort of saw, at least we're kind of in the area and watched everyone root for and all that.
I don't know. I don't think regarding that. I just think it's a special game because it's in our division. But I don't think it's any more or less special because of where I went to college.
Well, Ryan, is it unique? Is it unique? I'm sorry, Mike. Is it unique at all? I mean, I look at your story going through bumping from practice squads or whatever, and playing at the bottom of rosters and finding your way isn't that unusual. But I'm assuming that having gone to Harvard, you had other options. Did you ever give the thought to hanging it up and saying, you know what, I got this degree and there are other things that I can do?
No, well, I mean, I got drafted in the seventh round by the Rams and was the three there for 2 years, then got traded and was the backup in Cincinnati. So I've never been cut, never been on a practice squad, but definitely not. I mean, this is what I want to do. This is my passion, and I'm going to play for as long as they let me.
Ryan, what is it that you got your degree in at Harvard?
Just curious. Economics.
Economics. So Wall Street never beckoned you?
Well, to be honest, I mean, going into my junior year, that was the thought. That's kind of the path that you take. Uh-huh. You study economics. You go to Wall Street for a few years, and then you figure out your life after that. And that is probably what it would have done had the NFL not been calling. And really, I didn't think the NFL thing was a remote possibility up until after my junior year when agents started calling me. And then, it was something that I guess I figured I had a chance at. But up until then, Wall Street was the plan of attack.
Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's a local recruit in the area who actually is choosing Harvard over Stanford, which is kind of an eye-opening thing. But do you think that what you've shown, that being able to be a starting quarterback coming from a place like that, do you think that shows maybe future, prospects or players that you can sort of go to the NFL from anywhere, even an Ivy League place?
I definitely think it helps. I think that the thing that Coach Murphy brought to Harvard is the national recruiting. The thing he always told me was, if you're good enough, the NFL is going to find you. And you hear that, but you're never sure if it's really the case. So now that they're, I am a guy that has done that is in the NFL and that is playing, I certainly think it helps the case. And very, very excited. I'm happy about that decision of Harvard over Stanford.
Did you have 1A offers, Ryan, at all?
I did not. I didn't have any 1A offers.
Did you have any scholarship offers at all?
I had one scholarship offer from Eastern Washington, 1AA Big Sky School.
What would you? I mean, I think sometimes people have a hard time judging the Ivy League and where it stands because obviously you guys don't go to the playoffs. Judging by the guys you've seen in the league and everything else, how good is Ivy League football, and how well do you think that it prepared you to play in the pros?
I think it's a lot better than everybody thinks. Because I mean, growing up in Arizona, I never realized that Harvard had a football team. So there's obviously not a lot of national exposure, but we were ranked in the top five my senior year in 1AA, and I don't know that means much, but I've watched, my little brother plays in Northern Arizona. I've watched a lot of Big Sky football, and I can tell you that in terms of the 1AA crowd, we can compete with anybody. So it's definitely a step down from the big schools, obviously the SEC schools and all that, but as a quarterback, it really did prepare me, because the speed is a big step going into the pros for anybody, but the speed of the guys I'm throwing to is also better, so it takes getting used to, and I think it definitely prepared me in a way.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, and obviously a very smart kid, not only because he went to Harvard, but very well thought out, and looks like he's sort of embracing the role that he now has. in trying to step up and play quarterback for the Bills and tackle his opponent in the Patriots this weekend. All right, well, we know that this is already a very busy shopping time of the year. If you haven't already done your shopping, good luck to you. But maybe there's some opportunity still out there. Christina Acker is going to host Shop Talk, obviously, as she does on Wednesdays here on Patriots.com Radio. It's coming up here in just a couple of moments. Hey, Christina.
How's it going, John? Do you have all your shopping done?
Believe it or not, yes.
Good
but
for
I
you.
Will admit, I will admit that I didn't have much to do because there were a couple of like major quote unquote family gifts this year.
Okay.
So I didn't have to go out in terms of numbers this year, which is probably just as well for me.
Are you a
just
online
in terms
shopper?
Of spend?
Yes, in terms of spend, right. And I do like to online shop.
Okay. Well, we've got a battle going on always on Shop Talk between coming in the pro shop and buying online, but they're both great options.
Don't be jealous that I've been chatting online with babes all day.
Yes, that's what we do here. But we're going to have all the specials going on. We've got a week to go. I can't believe it's already here, so keep listening.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's shocking. Now, the question that I would have is an obvious one. I'm sure you'll probably, detail. But if someone bought, say, today or the next couple of days, shipping-wise, can they still get their stuff in time?
Yes, they definitely can. That's what the guys are telling me in here, that they definitely are still in time. All those last minute waiting till the week before to get it done, you could still get stuff shipped to you. So go ahead and make those orders now.
All right. Cool.
Cool.
Very good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
You too.
All right. See you soon. Christina Acker, Shop Talk coming up in a couple of moments. Thanks to Eric Scalavino. Thanks to Mark Kelso of the Buffalo Bills Radio Network for joining us. And same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow in studio. Eric will be back. Russell Baxter from ESPN. He'll be with us as well as we take a look at the entire week's activities going on this Sunday as the Pats get ready for the Buffalo Bills.